You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome to Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Wes Goldberg, host of Locked On Warriors, here with Dave Vermil, host of Locked On Heat. We're going to spend most of today's show going over our truncated season awards, assuming that those even happen, David. But I wanted to start with this report that FIBA, the governing body of basketball, is telling players worldwide to stay inside, stressing that under, quote, no circumstance should our passion to play basketball surpass the importance of following the instructions of public authorities, end quote. FIBA said it plans to make decisions soon about the Basketball Champions League, Basketball Champions League Americas, and the Basketball Africa League, all, you know, international competitions, as well as possibly pushing for the postponement of this year's Olympics in Tokyo. And to me, David, that's the headline, is not only is FIBA now basically shutting everything down in along with the NBA, but they could now push for a possible postponement of the Olympics until next year when hopefully all this stuff has been cleaned up. And by the way, Canada and Australia have already said that they are not going to send athletes to Tokyo for the Olympics. What do you think of all this?
Well, I think it's the right step. I think it makes a lot of sense. And I think as athletes, their first priority is almost always to kind of just go and try to get as much play in as possible. Like, I think we've seen enough social media posts from players, and I mean, not just in basketball, but in other sports in general. But I mean, there are certainly some frustration there, just like there is for almost everybody. I mean, the idea of staying confined is very difficult for most people for prolonged periods of time. And then when you take into consideration the fact that these millionaire athletes are so used to traveling so frequently, to having, you know, days filled with inactivity, but at least they're in motion as far as they're traveling to other cities. Sometimes they go to 3-4 cities in 1 week, and you know, they have to stay in shape, and they at least have the kind of schedule of you know, shoot arounds before certain days, practices, etc., and of course the incredible energy that's used up in an actual NBA game. And now they don't have that kind of release. For a lot of them, they're kind of confined to that home setting. And you know, I've seen more ignorant people respond on Twitter and social media, say, oh, why don't they just play in their multi-million dollar homes that probably have some kind of basketball court equipped in there. It's like, well, that's not the case, jackass. I mean, most of the people in the NBA don't have a full hardwood court to go and get their shots up. Which isn't to say that they probably can't have access to it, but the problem is that, you know, you have a lot of players who want to get access to it. Collegiate players, I mean, just people in general who want to have access to these courts. And, you know, your typical NBA player, again, doesn't have that kind of facility built into their home. So there's some frustration. There's some energy there that they need to burn out. And so when you have, you know, basketball organizations taking that proactive step to say, you know what, we have to look out for the safety of our players above all else, I think that kind of drives home the point a little bit more. And I think most players have been taking this very seriously, at least from what we've seen in glimpses here and there via social media. But I think that kind of overarching kind of directive really makes a lot of sense. And as far as the Olympics are concerned, I think
can I piggyback on that for a second? Because
of course
you hit on something very key there, I think, which athletes tend to play through things, right? They just always have injuries, sickness.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Michael Jordan's maybe his most famous moment is the flu game. And we are dealing right now with the flu. And I'm not saying that Michael Jordan would have went out there and played through the coronavirus, but basically that's sort of what I think a lot of these basketball players view this as, is, hey, I'm a basketball player, I'm young. I mean, not to keep pounding on Rudy Gobert here, but he kind of approached it like that, like, hey, it's the flu, big deal. Michael Jordan could go play through this. We're supposed to be playing through this. Like, they are like legends if they can play through these things. And they try to always try to play through injuries, play hurt. They wear it as a badge of honor. And they are not used to, just like nobody is used to, dealing with something like this, like the coronavirus, and how not only that they're not affected, but the message here is, okay, maybe, you know, 27-year-old basketball player in his prime who is in prime shape can play, who could get the coronavirus and survive and it'd be okay. But for FIBA to step in and say, we don't care about that. We don't care about how good shape you're in. You shouldn't be going out and playing in your local gyms. You shouldn't be going out and you need to be embracing the social distancing thing, just because if you're sick, it doesn't mean that if you get other people sick that they're going to be okay just like you are. And that is the message here, because basketball, as we know, I mean, it doesn't take a professional to know this. You and I have been on a pickup court before. Like, it is sweaty, it is gross, and there is a lot of touching, right? That is a prime place to get coronavirus. If somebody is sick, everybody on that court is going to get sick. And oh, yeah. So, you know, we're talking about, yeah, maybe LeBron James has his indoor facility and he can work out, but there's a lot of guys, like you said, who don't have that luxury and would have to go to a public place in order to get some basketball in. And everybody here in San Francisco, where I'm recording this, they're sheltered in place. They don't have that option. But that's not the case in a lot of countries or a lot of cities or counties across the United States right now. It's been more and more every day. That's not the case everywhere. And so it's good that I think FIBA, the NBA, have come in and stepped in and said, no, just don't do it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. And I had totally kind of overlooked that, but you're right. I think, you know, it was an option for a lot of players who were still within the markets in which they play. I mean, and even if they were traveling back to home or wherever their families might be, they probably still had the option, because a lot of states, as you said, still don't have any kind of quarantine or lockdown procedure in place yet. We're starting to see more and more of that in South Florida, but it still hasn't taken root yet. And again, you always have a subsect of humanity who's willing to say, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and spend time at the beach anyway until those things were shut down just a few days ago. And of course, a lot of spring breakers as well. I mean, it's understandable. There's a lot of frustration from everybody. You want to go out and do things. And I mean, most of us aren't at the same kind of athletic level as your typical NBA player. I know maybe I'm just speaking for myself, but I think you're pretty comfortable in that group as well. Either way, I think they're starting to understand a little bit more, and it's good that somebody else is looking out for them despite their own, you know, looking out for them despite their own interests sometimes, because they're not always willing to comply, as right. You said. Yeah.
Well, and this bleeds into the Olympics conversation too, not just basketball players who, look, if you had the Olympics in July and you start these trials in June and stuff, you want to be in shape. If you want to play in the Olympics, you need to be in shape to make the Olympic team, right? Not only to perform well in the Olympics, but to make it that far. A lot of these players probably would want to be practicing and working out. You know, whether or not you're playing for a playoff bound team or not, you want to make sure that you're in shape so you have a chance. And that is all sports, right? That's whether or not you're, you know, swimming or whatever sport you're involved in, you want to make sure you're in peak shape, because you've been training for this for 4 years now, right? These Olympics. And so you're not going to adhere to social distancing, because Olympic athletes are maniacal about their training. And so to stay indoors and be asked not to go into a pool and not to get on a basketball court when the Olympics are just months away, they're just not going to do that for the most part.
Well, I mean, overlooking the fact that maybe a lot of athletes are playing in team sports. I mean, how do you practice as a water polo participant without the rest of your team, you know, et cetera?
Exactly. And so that's why you have, you know, a country like Canada saying, forget it, we're not going to send our athletes there, not only because it's dangerous, but because we're not going to be represented well, and because straight up it's wrong to be doing this. And I think Sally Jenkins, a columnist for the Washington Post, a really good columnist, had a good piece the other day about how the Olympics needs to get in front of this, just like FIBA and the NBA has, and just say, you know what, we're shutting this thing down, because not only are we talking about the actual games themselves, the event itself in Tokyo, right? We're talking about the lead up to it and all the training that I was just talking about being of a danger to not only the Olympic athletes, but anybody who they could possibly come in contact with. And so they need to shut it down for the sake of social distancing, which this entire world is trying to adhere to, except for the Olympics, who assume, I guess, that they're better than everybody else. I don't know what the reason why the Olympics hasn't already come out and said, you know what, let's just push this thing back to 2021.
Because I think at its surface, unfortunately, is the fact that this Olympic Games takes place every 4 years, and the fact that a country like Japan has invested, just like every country invests so much money in putting these games together, that if you're looking at, even if you're postponing it for next year, you're going to have such a decrease in participation and attendance that you're going to wind up losing a lot of money. And it's the unfortunate side of the Olympics is that while everybody thinks of it as a bunch of amateurs participating at the peak of their athletic ability, the organization, the country, so many people stand to make so many millions and billions of dollars in some cases that they fear losing that kind of money. And so they're trying to hang on as much as possible, hoping for a miracle that changes things within the next week or so. Yeah. When the reality is that even next year seems unlikely for the Olympic Games to take place. place. Like, it could very well just be canceled altogether. And that's the reality. I mean, if we're looking at the timeline of developing any kind of vaccine and everything else, I mean, it could take a lot longer than just a month or two for things to work out. And I think that's the reality that a lot of people, and especially a lot of corporations like the IOC, have failed to accept.
It bothers me that there are some, like, FIBA, NBA, the Masters, like the PGA is postponing the Masters, and golf is like a single event.
Well, they can make up their money though, right? I mean, that's the whole thing. Like, the NBA has next season. The Olympics in Japan may never take place again.
The NBA can't make up the money if they lose. Like, there's only so many games. Like, yeah, you've got next year's games, but missing almost 20 games, like, that's revenue that they know that they're already missing. And right. The Olympics can make it up if they just go to if they postpone it to next year, they can make that up.
Maybe.
They can make that up. I mean, there's going to be losses no matter what, but they can make it up.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, but I mean, I think they're worried that whether or not it might get canceled altogether. And if that's the case, Japan has invested money in stadiums and all sorts of setup and everything else like that. They stand to lose millions and millions of dollars, if not more. So I think that's a concern.
I know you're not defending them. I know you're just
not at all.
You're laying it out, but it's like, why not just, we don't have to cancel it. Just postpone it until next year. Just announce it. So that way we at least know that these athletes can get back inside. They're not putting anybody at risk. And then we could just at least have this. Like, the NBA could cancel its season. We don't know. But for the time being, they just said we're going to postpone it. And then you postpone it and play it by ear, I guess. It's like the best we could do. And none of this stuff is ideal, obviously. Yeah. Speaking of nothing being ideal, the end of season awards, we're not going to be able to obviously get the same sort of sample that we're going to have. There are still 17-ish games left in the regular season. So we're going to go ahead and run with our truncated season awards next. But first, let me tell you about one of the ultimate life hacks. We know it's hard to find time to read, which is key for your personal development in business and your personal life. There's an incredible app that solves this problem. I highly recommend it. It's called Blinkist. Blinkist is really unique, and it works on your phone, your tablet, or your web browser. Blinkist takes the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books and condenses them down into just 15 minutes that you can read or listen to. You've heard interviews with successful people and leaders, and they all tout just how much they read. Blinkist is made for people like you who are busy and want to get the main points of a book quickly so you could start using that information right away. And with its audio feature, Blinkist makes it easy to finish a book during your commute, your lunch break, or while you exercise. 12 million people are using Blinkist right now, and it has a massive and growing library that includes self-help, business, health, history, and tons of bestsellers. Now, this is the part of the ad copy that tells me to share my personal experience. And look, while being sheltered in place here in San Francisco, I have nothing but time to get through some of the books that I've been meaning to read. But that doesn't mean that I want to read the whole book sometimes. I could still use Blinkist to get the key takeaways from some of the most dense things. For example, I'm thinking about using my free trial on Sapiens, Walter Isaacson's biography on Albert Einstein, and there's a few others that I'm thinking about. How do you do it? With Blinkist, you get unlimited access to read or listen to a massive library of condensed nonfiction books, all the books that you want, and all for one low price. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer for just our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/NBA and try it for free for 7 days and save 25% off of a new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/NBA to start your free 7-day trial. You'll also save 25% off, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/NBA. All right, David. So right before the end of the season, right before the hiatus was announced, the big storyline in the NBA was, can LeBron catch up to Giannis for MVP? Giannis basically had the MVP award for months. LeBron has a good weekend, and he is suddenly, the narrative is out there. He is trying to catch Giannis. And look, I'm not trying to disparage LeBron. I think he's had an awesome season. He should absolutely be in the conversation for MVP. But let's start with our truncated season awards with the MVP award. Do you think LeBron did enough to catch Giannis, or does Giannis still have your award, or do you have a dark horse candidate? We should make that.
I think, like, we debated the LeBron James narrative shift a couple of weeks ago before the end of the season. We kind of dismissed it, and we looked at, look, it's okay to say he's putting up really good numbers without saying that his numbers are so great that they're going to overtake Giannis's impact over the course of the season. And I think that's the case, is that Giannis has had a greater impact for longer this year as an individual player, helping guide that team to even greater heights than they achieved last year. To me, unfortunately, Adetokounmpo is still the MVP. Like, I want to make it, you know, I want to make it more interesting. We could debate it as much as possible. I'm trying to think what would have to happen over the next 17 games or so in order for LeBron to even have a more realistic chance. At this point, it's almost like, you know how you sometimes underrate players and then they wind up becoming so underrated that they become kind of like overrated, and then you kind of circle back and they wind up becoming underrated again. This is almost the case like with LeBron. Like, I feel like, you know, now we're starting to build up so much hype. And eventually, if the games had been able to play out, we would have dismissed his MVP case. But he might have actually been able to do enough for the 17 games to at least challenge it. I mean, he's been playing really, really well. I think you look at the kind of talent that the Los Angeles Lakers have, and maybe you could say they're better players on the Lakers squad than there are in Milwaukee. And maybe LeBron has a legitimate case, especially if he puts up monster numbers over those games. But right now, being that it is the way it is, I think Adetokounmpo is a clear MVP favorite.
Look, both teams have the best records in their respective conference, and the Lakers aren't that much, like, they're only four games behind the Bucks in the win-loss column. So let's not act like Milwaukee has ran away as far as the league's best record. They have the league's best record.
Sure.
But the Lakers aren't that far behind them, and with 17 games left, who knows? Maybe they could have caught them. I think, and LeBron, obviously, the best player on the Lakers, and Milwaukee's best player is Giannis. So, look, just from that standpoint alone, those are your two guys, right? If you just say best player on best teams in best in two conferences, those are your two guys. And then, look, however you want to define most valuable player, there's no
question. Well, how do you define it? How do you define it?
I kind of just take whoever the best player was that year. Who owned that season, right? And to me, just the way the Bucks have dominated from start to finish, that to me matters. And that sort of was the argument against Harden in favor of Giannis last year, right? Because remember that the Rockets got off to such a bad start, and then the argument then was, well, James Harden went on this tear of scoring like 50 points a game for like 20 straight games or whatever it was, and mm-hmm. saved their season. It's like, yeah, but he also didn't like help. He was also part of the team when they were below 500 through the first 2 months of the year. So we have to take that into consideration, too. So Giannis got points for consistency and won the award, rightly so, last season. And I think it was similar to this season. Not to say LeBron wasn't consistent. And I thought the Lakers have been really good, obviously, all year long. It's just, you know, you take LeBron, you take him off the court. Even the minutes when Anthony Davis is on the court without him aren't as good as when LeBron and Anthony Davis are on the court together. I think LeBron is actually slighted a little bit more than he should be because he has Anthony Davis. In this, I never really bought, like, the second player on the team really matters for the MVP award. I mean, how dumb do you have to be to just watch the game? Is LeBron not the best player in the league or up there? Hey, obviously he is. And it just isn't to say that LeBron wouldn't be the best player in the playoffs. I just think that Giannis, with the numbers that he's putting up and the consistency at which the Milwaukee Bucks have been winning, I mean, their point differential is through the roof. All the metrics of when Giannis is on the floor is incredible. Like, the numbers at the end of the day, like, it's not even a narrative thing to me. It's just the numbers at the end of the day are so overwhelmingly in favor of Giannis that you can't not pick Giannis as good as LeBron has been. And so that's where the argument falls apart.
Maybe this is not exactly where we wanted the show to go to, but maybe an interesting question is, who's the third most valuable player in the league? I mean, if you're pretty clear that Giannis is, and I think we both are, and that LeBron is 1B, maybe even, you know, just right behind a 2A, who is the third best player in the league?
Third best, or just like we're talking about the third
MVP
third in my
race.
MVP?
Yes.
I think you can make an honest case for like a guy like Nikola Jokic.
Yes.
Other than
fair.
Yeah, without him,
CP3, I mean, maybe, I don't know. I'm sure some Chris Paul fans. Yeah.
I mean, you could even, I don't know. I would go. I would probably go Nikola Jokic at this point. I would.
Yeah. That's fair.
Let's do Defensive Player of the Year. Who's in your running for this before we talk about who we would give it to?
I think Adetokounmpo has a pretty good chance.
Oh, yeah.
I think Gobert is also up there as well. I think Rudy has done a phenomenal job for us this season, and I think he's a pretty worthy candidate.
I've also got Anthony Davis in that group.
Yeah.
Awesome defensively.
Yeah, that was going to be...
Yeah, okay, so between those three, who do you give it to?
Ooh. You know, it's That's a difficult one because there's no metric to show their impact. I would have to say personally, I think Gobert is the most impactful player defensively of those three. I love all three of their individual defenses, but I just, and maybe I'm wrong here, my feeling is that Gobert impacts other teams so much more because of his size, his incredible presence. Like, he shifts the way. Not to say that Adetokounmpo doesn't play great defense or that Davis doesn't play great defense, but Gobert shifts so much of what a team's offense can feel comfortable doing. Like, we see great scorers kind of shy away from trying to drive to the rim, putting up shots that they normally wouldn't because of the presence of Rudy Gobert. And to me, that's what makes him as fearsome a defender as he is.
I can't disagree with you with the... you know, the resume of Rudy Gobert and just how impactful he is, and Utah's plus-minus numbers with Rudy Gobert on the floor defensively. I mean, you're right, there's no great defensive metric, so it's hard to go off of that. Right. You really do have to kind of go off of a lot of eye test and you know, just anecdotal things about, like, how opponents have to change their schemes. And you're right, Gobert, maybe more or not, and definitely not less so than any other player in the league, changes the way other teams go about creating offense, trying to score. But I just can't bring myself... like, the Jazz have the 11th best defensive rating in the league, and I just can't bring myself to give somebody the defensive player of the award. Whether it's his fault or not, I'm not sure if I'm right in here. There's a lot of reasons why Utah's defense hasn't been good. Mostly, from a personnel standpoint, they decided, hey, Gobert should be enough for us to be okay defensively. We need to add more offense, which is sort of what they did this year. So I don't... like, maybe it's unfair to penalize Gobert for that, but I just can't give the Defensive Player of the Year award to somebody who isn't on one of the top 10 defenses in the league, let alone a top 5 defense, which is why I have Giannis as my Defensive Player of the Year, with Anthony Davis a close second, because you look at the Bucks, they have the best defensive rating in the league, and it's not close whatsoever. And the Lakers have the third best defensive rating in the league. And I think that's obviously because of Giannis and because of Anthony Davis, respectively. And you look, I mean, that Bucks defensive rating, they have a defensive rating of 101.6, which would be the best defensive rating in the league since the 2015-16 season, when the Spurs had that vaunted defense. So, and by the way, scoring has only gone up since then, right? And it's been nearly a half decade, and they have by far, like, it might be the most impressive defensive year that we've had in a very, very long time, considering where scoring is going and how good they have been. They have just been shutting down opponents. That doesn't happen without Giannis, and there's a lot of reasons why that happens for the Bucks. But Giannis is the linchpin to it. He is incredibly dangerous, like, just maniacal defensively. Like, he's getting in passing lanes. His long arms help protect the rim. He might be the best center in the league, you could argue at this point, when he's playing the five defensively. Like, there are just things that he does.
My argument for everything. That, yeah, my argument against that is that so many of these awards tend to become like team awards when in reality they should be individual awards. And I think we've seen with the MVP thing as well. It's like, I mean, like, he has the best record. It's like, yeah, sure. But he also has a lot of great talent around him too. I mean, maybe not as good as LA's or some other teams, but he has a lot of talent there. No doubt. And I think that's the same thing defensively. Like, I've seen the argument from Bucks fans and even Bucks media in some cases saying, well, if it's not Giannis, it should be Brook Lopez. It's like, well, you know what? If you've got two guys up for best defensive player, that means you have a pretty good team defense, and neither of them should win it.
That's the argument for Anthony Davis too, right? I mean, who else is guarding on that team? Like, LeBron tries for like 5 minutes a game defensively, but maybe a little bit more than that. I should give him a little bit more credit this year. He's actually been quite good on that end. But
yeah.
Who else is guarding on that team? Like, is Kentavious Caldwell perimeter stopper?
Danny Green?
Danny Green has been, you know, not as good as he's been historically, I think, but fine, right? Transition defense is still there. He's still great at that. Anthony Davis has been awesome, though. I mean, I don't know that he changes the way you think about going against the Lakers' defense, the way you think about going against Utah's defense with Gobert in the middle. But what he could do as far as switching out onto the perimeter and then getting back to the rim and guarding the rim and blocking shots and doing these things and getting steals, I mean, he is as transformative defensively for that team as I think anybody else in the league. Like, you could make the case for me that Anthony Davis should be Defensive Player of the Year. I think he should already have one of those in his career. I don't think he has one yet. I think he should have gotten one. I think it was 3 years ago, his second to last season in New Orleans, his last real season in New Orleans. I thought he should have gotten it. But yeah, you could talk me into Anthony Davis for defensive player of the year. To me, it's between him and Giannis.
Well, okay. I mean, I don't see how that's fair. I mean, not criticizing you. I mean, you're free to make your choices as you see fit. But, I mean, I don't see how you can see Giannis as a legitimate candidate and also consider Davis, knowing that you have different criteria for each player.
I look at the numbers with Giannis, not just the defensive rating for the Bucks, but the on-court numbers are ridiculous. Like, the defensive metrics, and I know I don't love them, but they're just so insane for him. It's ridiculous. And then with Anthony Davis, I watch Lakers games, and when I watch a Lakers game for Anthony Davis, when I watch a Bucks game with Giannis, and when I watch a Jazz game with Gobert, I fear more Giannis and Davis more than I fear Gobert. And maybe that's just an aesthetics thing, because Giannis and Anthony Davis are getting out there on the perimeter and doing stuff, and Gobert is tremendous in the inside. You don't really see his impact. I get it. Like, I understand the argument, right? Because his whole thing is that you don't go to him, right? And Giannis and Davis in the meanwhile are just like kind of always.
I think he's
in the middle
improved
of the
as a perimeter defender, though.
He's gotten a little bit better, but he's still not nearly what Giannis and Davis can do.
That's fair.
All right. I think those are all decent choices.
Bam Adebayo is a good choice too.
Well, let's go to that. Most improved player. Is Bam your most improved player?
I'd like it to be that case, but I think how about this? It's hard for me not to pick Bam as the most improved player, although I think with him, it's not necessarily improvement so much as greater opportunity, and I think that's a lot of what most voters won't see, is that this was Bam last year, too. He's just a better version of it because he's getting a lot more minutes because he's not playing.
Oh, do you really think that, though? Do you think it's just a minutes thing with Bam? Because he seems to have been he's gotten much better, it seems. He is doing things that we didn't see him do last year. Is that just because of the minutes, or is that...
Is he really? I mean, you don't think that he was capable of doing these things? I mean, didn't we see over the course of his career him make great passes and him make the kind of defensive impact on the perimeter and
in
the interior?
I mean, it's one thing to make great passes from, like, the dribble handoff and triple threat spot, but point Bam Adebayo, we have never seen that. That's not to say he wasn't capable of it.
Yeah, I remember, look, when we were both hosting Locked On Heat last year, they had that stretch where Hassan was hurt, and Bam took over, and they won, like, I don't know, like five straight games in December. One game in particular against the Clippers when they were shorthanded, and they wound up winning because of Bam, and I think he had like almost like a triple-double, having an incredible impact as a starter. So it's hard to kind of weigh these things, you know, in a vacuum. And so to me, he has had a great year. I know a lot of Heat fans maybe listening to this show will probably say, well, why are you criticizing Adebayo? I'm not. I think he's always been this good. He's just getting much more opportunity to show off, too. I think the difference is that Brandon Ingram has probably taken a much more substantial leap as far as the player he was last year, where he was largely ineffective, maybe not as efficient a scorer, and now all of a sudden he's showing off this much more versatile offense that I don't think we saw this in the landscape. Like, I don't think that was the version of Ingram that we ever saw. Maybe a lot of his supporters in the Lakers probably originally thought, well, he'd be this player at some point, but I don't think a lot of us saw it coming this quickly, and especially not after being traded to the Pelicans. Like, you know, this was Zion Williamson's team, and Ingram was supposed to be just a kind of secondary player. If they're in the playoff front, especially now with you know, Williamson having missed so much time earlier in the season, a lot of that has to do with Brandon Ingram.
I think Brandon Ingram is a good choice. I didn't have Bam. I don't know why I argued for Bam that much, but I actually have Jason Tatum as my most improved.
Yeah, a lot of that has shifted as well. Like, he's had some monstrous games building up to the hiatus, so I could see why a lot of people have some buzz about Tatum's game.
Post All-Star break, Tatum has been unbelievable. I mean, he looks like somebody who could be a top 10 player in this league. I mean, he looks like a guy that you could build a chance. Like, look, small sample size, whatever. He looks to have taken a leap, and he looks.
Celtics fans certainly think that. I think a lot of Celtics fans probably think he's going to be. Look, I mean, maybe this is kind of ridiculous, but with the exodus of Tom Brady to Tampa Bay, people are looking at Jason Tatum as the face of Boston sports, and that's just kind of weird. I mean, considering
the
Bruins.
Wrong.
Yeah.
Are they? Like, who else is the face of Boston sports? I'm not a Boston fan. Like, tomorrow, John Corrales could talk about it, but like. I don't know who else would. It looks like Tatum is the guy, because he looks like he could be a guy. Like, he looks like you can win a championship with Jason Tatum as your best player. He looks like he could project to that point. Last year, I don't think people would have said that. His rookie year, his playoffs, I think people were starting to say, like, oh, he could be this. But we were like, going into this season, we don't know who was more valuable, Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown. Like, if you had to pick one, that was a real debate. And now I don't think it's close. I think Jaylen Brown's been good, but like, Jason Tatum. Like, he has taken a leap where, as a playmaker, he does things that we haven't seen before. The his efficiency has gone up, but not necessarily because he's just like cut out all that mid-range stuff that he was doing last year. But he's just gotten better at it. Like he's just gotten better at everything, at all, scoring at all three levels. He literally has improved in every meaningful way, and defensively he's gotten better too. And so I think he could be this two-way guy who you can, again, who could be a big part of a championship-winning team. So I've got Tatum, because we rarely see those sort of leaps happen to that sort of stratosphere. I'm not saying he's there yet, but he's real close, I think, to being right on the cusp of that. Sixth man of the year, let's just quickly breeze over. It's Lou Williams, right? And if it's not, just tell me who it is, but I don't really care.
I think Dennis Schroeder has some votes going
solid,
his way.
Solid, yep.
I personally like Goran Dragic. I mean, yep. Again, maybe a bit of homerism there, but I think he's been phenomenal, and his adapting the role coming off the bench for the first time in his career. I mean, since, you know, earlier with his in his days in Phoenix, I think has been incredible, and he's been a major factor in Miami winning games, especially just because of his late game offense. So I think he's a legitimate candidate there.
It's the same resume for all three of those guys, right? Backup ball handlers who put up points while they're, you know, the starters are on the bench for playoff teams. Any three of them can get it. Look, if Lou Williams doesn't get it, he's already got like seven of them or whatever. Wouldn't it be the end of the world. Give it to Goran Dragic. I'd be fine with that. Dennis Schroeder, nah. Rookie of the year, Ja Morant. It has to be. I do think that there would have been more of a case if Zion Williamson had played the next 17 games. I don't know that he would have gotten it over Ja Morant just because he's played the whole year. But I also don't, like, if Zion Williamson went out and averaged a triple-double for, like, 2 weeks, like, let's not underestimate our recency bias in the sports media world, right? Like Zion could have done something to get there. I don't think that this would have been a shoo-in had they played the rest of the year. That said, we are not playing the rest of the year, most likely, and I think it's easily Ja Morant.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there. I mean, I don't know exactly when the votes are cast, but my feeling is that if they had been at the end of the season and if the mid-April. Pelicans had... The day before the end of the season?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, either way, the Pelicans probably would have been much nearer a playoff berth. I mean, they either would have gone past the Grizzlies.
Good point.
Or, you know, yeah. So I think a lot of that would have influenced voting pretty significantly. And if the Pelicans had been neck and neck with the Grizzlies, and maybe the Grizzlies had lost some games there because they had a tougher schedule, et cetera, my feeling is that Williamson probably would have gotten a lot more consideration. A lot of people would have dismissed the fact that he missed so much this season. And that's, look, I know Grizzlies fans will probably be upset about it, but I think there's some buzz there. Look, it's mostly a forgettable award anyway, but if you're looking at Williamson being the face of the league moving forward, why not start giving him the hardware right away?
I always kind of felt like we gave too much credit to, like, games, like, the amount of games you play should matter, but if your impact is such that it is greater than the impact of another player who just played more games, like, Zion Williamson, if the Pelicans were to make the playoffs, it would be because Zion Williamson came back. They were not going to make the playoffs without Zion, and they were kind of okay. Like Brandon Ingram, you mentioned, he was a star for them, made his first All-Star team, etc. There were some nice things there, but with Zion, they literally became a playoff team, like a fringe playoff team. And their record with Zion was great. His impact on the court was phenomenal. Like I do think that you have a point where had they made the playoffs, you would, like, it would have been a disservice to just give it to Ja Morant just because we kind of gave it to him already. Like, before Zion ever got back, we sort of just gave it to Ja Morant. I thought it would have been worth a real conversation. And by the way, I would have voted for Zion Williamson if they would have gotten into the playoffs. I would have. Because I think that his impact in a smaller sample was greater than what Ja Morant did, as awesome as Ja Morant has been. You know, I do think that getting your team to the playoffs is still more impactful than great stats and highlights for a non-playoff team. Again, not sliding Ja Morant. Memphis outplayed, they definitely outplayed their expectations, but there's a difference between making the playoffs and not making the playoffs.
Watch your street on Beale Street next time you're out there.
I love Beale Street. Memphis is my favorite NBA city. I just want to say that. Beale Street, I have a great time there. I love watching Ja Morant. He's one of the most fun people I got to watch in person this year. That said, I would have probably given it to Zion in this hypothetical world. Shout out Beale Street.
Hey, Bourbon Street's pretty good too.
I kind of like Beale Street more than Bourbon Street. Am I bringing the Memphis Grizzlies fans back now? Like, can I just split? Yeah, like Beale Street is a cleaner, better version of Bourbon Street. Like,
woo!
It doesn't smell like vomit everywhere.
No, you know, it does
it's
not.
It's got its spots. The food on Bourbon Street is not as good as the food on Beale Street. Now, I'm not saying in New Orleans.
Do you go to Bourbon Street and go get food? Never. I mean, never. I've never done that.
Yeah, I walked by a Crystal Burger and I was like, no thanks. There was there's actually one pizza place that I have gone to a couple times when you have to, you know what I mean? But
sure.
It was yeah, I mean, but like I you get points for having your best food, not their best food, but you get points for having awesome food also on the party street. Bourbon Street doesn't get those points. Beale Street does. Beale Street does. I like Beale Street a lot.
You brought him back. You brought him back in your favor. Now you won't get maimed. How about that? You'll get these severely
better uniforms hurt. If they go throwback. Better uniforms than the Pelicans. They've got things. Coach of the year. There's a lot. I thought there was a tremendous amount of coaching performances this year. You look at anybody from Eric Spoelstra. You can look at Nate McMillan. In the Eastern Conference, Nick Nurse has done an awesome job. Obviously, Mike Budenholzer is going to get some buzz for having the best record. But I'm going with Frank Vogel, David, because first of all, he took this Lakers roster that didn't really make a whole lot of sense. Like, in theory, okay, you've got LeBron and Anthony Davis. You know that I've been high on that duo all season long. And you kind of surrounded them with shooters, but you didn't really surround them with shooters, you know? You took this, like, you had to figure out a way to make Anthony Davis work as a power forward while playing next to JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard because he didn't want to play center all season. You had to work around your superstars who are transcendent and awesome and great and all of those things, but are high maintenance nonetheless. And he did that with a rest of the roster that's not very good, and they have the second best record in the West, or in the league, the best record in the West. I love their chances if the playoffs were to start today of winning the entire thing. And it's just, and I kind of want to give Frank Vogel some credit here because he wasn't even their first choice to be their head coach, and he's done an awesome job, I thought.
Yeah, I don't agree with you, but I like the fact that you're giving Vogel a lot of credit that probably has not been directed his way because it's certainly well deserved. Like, I think he took so much crap for you know, maybe not managing a bad Magic roster as well as he should have. And I don't think that was any kind of failure due to him, you know, being able to connect with players or anything like that. It was just a bad roster. I mean, it was a team in Orlando that just didn't know how to win a lot of games. And so it took 2 years of Vogel and then 1 year of Steve Clifford to kind of maximize that talent. But he did a phenomenal job. I think he's done a phenomenal job this year with the Lakers, trying to get a veteran team. And I think a lot of people on the outside will say, oh, they have so many good players. They have, you know, MVP type candidates in Davis and James, etc. That's hard. That's difficult to manage all those egos, especially when you have guys like Dwight Howard and Rajon Rondo who have broken teams in the past. I mean, each of them have been very, very bad as far as locker room presences. And I think for a guy like for Vogel to kind of get everybody on the same page speaks volumes about his ability to connect with people and get the most out of them, get them to kind of unite as a group. And I think a lot of people are recognizing that. I'd also have
well,
to
wait,
some
and I, but to that, like, usually it's not the video coordinator guy. It's not the guy who like emerged from the depths of like the arena from the video room who is able to connect with players and manage egos like that. That's usually, right? That's usually the former player's
coach, right?
Right. Yeah. That's usually the guy who has that quote-unquote street cred. Not right. Frank Vogel, who has no street cred whatsoever. At all.
He was on David Letterman like 30 years ago. I think that's his street cred, right?
Yes. So it is a testament to him and just his innate ability. Not even the resume. Just the cojones that he has to be able to manage that locker room in a high-wire situation. I thought it has been awesome. And to me, he's done the best coaching job this year when all things are considered. But who's yours?
I want to give some votes to Taylor Jenkins just because from everything we're hearing, he's got the Grizzlies playing very, very relaxed. And they had really low expectations for the season. I think everybody saw them as mostly a lottery-bound team. And the fact that they've managed to kind of put themselves, even after trading away a lot of their veterans at the trade deadline, they had no games played from Andre Iguodala. They had Jay Crowder struggling over there. And then all of a sudden, still, they managed to kind of get this group together and really turn into a very fun, lovable group that's played at a very high level. So he has to get some consideration. But I'm thinking, you know, Nick Nurse has done such a great job of getting this Raptors team that really had no reason whatsoever to run it back. Like, they could have taken a year off, and I think all of Canada would have been fine with it, especially Toronto. Like, the Raptors fans would have been like, you know what? It's okay. We still won that championship last year. They somehow are better this year than they were last year, even with the loss of Kawhi Leonard. That speaks volumes about Nurse kind of getting everybody to just, you know, kind of engage themselves and say, you know what, let's run it back. Let's be more focused on trying to be a winning team this year. I'm not sure that they're legitimate title contenders, but I'm sure nobody saw them as legitimate title contenders outside of Toronto last year either, and somehow they wound up pulling it off. I think that's it's been a phenomenal performance from them all year long to kind of just stay in the moment, to kind of, you know, put what happened last year in the rearview mirror, and despite injuries, despite, you know, some turnover in the roster, just somehow managing to be a really, really good team that's put together a lot of wins too. I mean, and doing it pretty impressively. Yeah.
I want to clean one thing up that I said before. Memphis is, if the playoffs were to start today, Memphis would be in the playoffs.
Oh, yeah. They
And it would be because, not only because of Taylor Jenkins, but a big part of him. You're right. He's done an awesome job. You did when you said Taylor Jenkins, I did have to think for a beat and just try to remember who he was coaching. I was like, wait, is that the new Knicks guy? Is that the Timberwolves? Like, which guy is he again? But we do remember him. But, yeah, I think Nick Nurse he's on my list, too. Where does he rank? Like, is he not one of the best three coaches in the league? I was convinced in Nick Nurse, and people came after me after I said this. I said, after the finals last year, I was like, he's one of the best three coaches in the league. Definitely one of the best five coaches in the league. And people came after me like, oh, it's one season, you're going to judge him? I'm like, I judge coaching in a lot of ways, but one of the main things that I like is not the out-of-timeout plays, okay, Brad Stevens? It's more of the game-to-game... The game-to-game game planning, the ability to shift strategy on the fly, the ability to make decisions in the course of a game, that's what I look, and the creativity that comes with that. Nick Nurse is above all else. It's him and Eric Spoelstra to me who are the best at in-game adjustments and game-to-game adjustments in the league. And though it's not close between the, like, it's those two and everybody else in the rest of the league. There's a lot of Eric Spoelstra to Nick Nurse's game. I still give Spo the best coach in the league, all things considered. We've seen him do it with the Egos, like we were talking about with Frank Vogel. We've seen him do it with bad teams that had no business being even in the running for a playoff spot. He got them in the running for playoff spots when your best player was James Johnson or whatever. And he could play all different tunes, right? Like, to me, Eric Spoelstra can coach at all different levels in a good way. So to me, whole package, Spo's the best coach in the league. Nick Nurse is not that far behind him right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty convincing argument. You know, I like Spoelstra as well, and I cover the team, and I see him kind of manage all these players and get everybody there. And, you know, one of the recurring themes that we hear so much with the Heat is that it's not for everybody, but somehow Spoelstra manages to get everybody focused and playing at a very high level. And I think you're seeing this, I mean, they went through a really massive transformation where they lost a lot of players. They weren't playing a lot of the guys that were on the roster. You look at Jimmy Butler and you look at how, you know, he's the last few seasons, and a lot of people would argue that maybe he's not a great fit and he's difficult to coach. They've got a great relationship. Like, they speak glowingly of one another, and I think that speaks a lot of what Spoelstra can do as far as managing personalities. He learns on the fly. He learned, you know, very difficultly trying to manage Dwayne Wade's ego during his peak as a player, then trying to incorporate LeBron James and Chris Bosh. I mean, he's had some really, really great teams, and he's managed to do a really great job with a lot of them. So he absolutely deserves some votes. But, you know, is Greg Popovich no longer a great coach just because he's had a bad team? I don't know.
I mean, yeah. He's a great coach. I just, like, if you were to give me one coach, if you gave me one coach right now, you said, hey, whatever team you have, you get to pick one coach to coach you through the playoffs. I pick Spoelstra number one.
Ooh.
I think I go, and then after that, it might be Nick Nurse. Like, I think there's a real argument to be made, and I think Steve Kerr needs to get some credit there, but we'll see if he can, you know, do stuff next year. Craig Popovich would be up there, but for me, I would take Spo, and Nick Nurse I would have to really consider. Like, he would be up there for me. But with what he did, to credit to your defensive to your coach of the year argument, I think Nick Nurse has an obvious argument to be made. But those are our truncated season awards. I think that's all of them. I think we hit all of them. Yeah, we did, right?
So yes, we did.
Giannis is MVP, and then we basically disagreed on everything else. That's fine. Remember to listen to and subscribe to Locked On NBA on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're on iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. For David Romeau, I'm Wes Goldberg. Thanks for listening.